This is Tridio Media, and I'm Father Roderick, and it's a nice day in Amersfoort, the Netherlands. The sun is shining outside, but I'm inside in the studio behind the microphone. From Star Wars to the sacraments, from technology to theology, this show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, the trends and the tradition. I'm Father Roderick. Welcome to my show. This show is brought to you ad-free thanks to my patrons. And if you want to join them and help me produce these shows, then please go to patreon.com/FatherRoderick. I want to say a special thank you to Charles for upping his Patreon support this week. And I also want to thank two departing patrons, Jan and Bill. They've been patrons for quite a while, but for several reasons, they are no longer able to support me. Thank you so much for your support so far, and there will be other people stepping in. Let's go to the news.
Do you know what's going on? This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
These past few days, nothing went as planned. I was actually supposed to be on the plane to Panama. I think I already mentioned last week that that journey was canceled, and I was supposed to be there for to film a report on the preparations for World Youth Day in Panama at the beginning of 2019. But we couldn't just we couldn't get it together. It was there were too many risks involved, and so that didn't happen. And then I was also supposed to be filming in the north of the country for 3 days, and a number of interviews that we had planned were canceled at the last moment, so we had to cancel that as well. So it's kind of a weird feeling. Like I'm sitting here and I'm able to to record this show, but I wasn't supposed to be here. So well, there's an upside to every downside. I think I said that last week as well. One thing that I did enjoy and that really made this week a good week after all was that I was able to get my tickets for the upcoming Star Wars Celebration in Chicago from April 11 to April 15, 2019. Now, the Star Wars Celebration is perhaps the most important fan event for Star Wars fans from all over the world. I think last year they skipped the event, so they're no longer doing this every year. I was present at the very first Star Wars Celebration in Denver, Colorado. This was right before, a few months before the premiere of Star Wars The Phantom Menace. And it was something new for Lucasfilm. They'd never done something like that before, but they were starting to realize how important it was to connect with the fans. If not for the joy of hanging out with fans and sharing the love for Star Wars, if not for that, then definitely for business reasons, because the fans were starting to become a major asset when it comes to the promotion of the movies. And the buzz among the fans can make or break a movie. And that's not just true for Star Wars. It's true for almost any franchise right now. So, of course, with the last episode of the current Star Wars trilogy premiering towards the end of 2019, they need the fans to turn the tide, because I'm pretty sure that everyone at Disney and Lucasfilm is surprised and disappointed by the lack of enthusiasm for Solo, a Star Wars story. So I think they are going to double their efforts in 2019 to make sure that the marketing and the enthusiasm around the sequel to The Last Jedi hits all the marks. And of course, I want to be there, but I was never able to join previous celebrations because of obligations in the parish. Oftentimes, this was happening during Easter, or just at times that I was unable to travel far. Now, in 2019, it's going to be the week before Easter. Palm Sunday will still be part of those dates, but I'll be able to find a way to get there despite that. And I can be back in time for the Paschal Triduum and for Easter, which, of course, is super important. I cannot skip that for whatever reason, for any reason. And fortunately, I will be hosted by a parish, by St. Patrick's Parish, north of Chicago. They extended a warm welcome to me, and I am able to stay in their retreat center. So I'm super happy that I can be with fellow Star Wars fans who also happen to be Catholics. And I can be in that parish also for Palm Sunday. So it's going to be an adventure, and I'm really looking forward to it. And if you are in the Chicago area and you're also going to the Star Wars celebration, let me know. We definitely should find a way to meet. And now it's going to be difficult to get tickets if you haven't ordered them yet. They had these VIP tickets where you would get very expensive. I mean, it's like $850 for 5 days. I don't think that many people could afford that, which would give you less waiting time, etc., to be present at the various panels. Those were sold out within 5 seconds. Actually, I pressed the button. I was counting down when the moment the tickets went on sale. I pressed the button. I got into this virtual queue, and then when I finally got to the page that allowed me to order tickets, it already said that the VIP tickets were sold out. So I think the number of tickets must have been extremely small. But to my surprise, the 5-day tickets, which you can get at a discount, were also sold out within 2 or 3 days. I've never seen that happen before. So the only tickets that are left are the daily tickets, which are, of course, more expensive. I don't know if this is because they have limited the tickets. That's possible, too. Perhaps the venue is not as big as previous years. It could also be that the interest is immense. Or it could be that it's just a marketing trick to get people to buy the one-day tickets because they will make more money on that. Well, anyway, they're not going to make more money on me than they already did because I already got the tickets and I'm stoked. I'm super excited. And with that, it is time for our movie and TV segment.
I do not like movies.
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
You know what? This jingle that I created for the movie and TV segment is applicable to the movie that I want to review today, which is a movie that is not yet in theaters in the United States, in North America, but it has premiered earlier in parts of Europe and some other parts of the world. So I've been able to watch it this past week. And I can give you an early review. Now, of course, as always, this is going to be a completely spoiler-free review, but it will allow you to at least get a sense of whether this is worth your time or not. And the movie that I'm going to review today is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. It is the, I don't know which movie it is. Let me pause this. I have an old iPad, so it doesn't have much memory. So I put the trailer ready to play on the show. But apparently, if I switch to the jingle program that I used to play the jingles on the show, it doesn't hold the YouTube app. It's one of the reasons that sometimes I need to upgrade to to another device. It's just because my demands are increasing. All right, let's play this short trailer. It's 30 seconds.
A rescue op? What could go wrong?
Hey, Blue.
I brought you something.
Okay.
Holy! Run!
The island is in the past.
There's a town 5 miles from here.
Life cannot be contained.
Welcome to Jurassic World.
Rated PG-13.
June 22, that's when it premieres in the United States. Well, I'm a super fan of the Jurassic Park and the Jurassic World movies. I saw them all in theaters. I remember seeing Jurassic Park 2 when I was still studying in Rome, in Italian, which was weird. And for dinosaurs, it doesn't really matter. The Italian dinosaurs are a little bit more wordy than their American counterparts, so they do a lot more growling and gesturing than... No, just kidding. And I love the concept of this forgotten world, and seeing these lifelike recreations, virtual recreations, digital recreations of creatures that once roamed the Earth. And there is this fascination that most kids have with dinosaurs. It's like, these creatures must have been so majestic, and yet they are totally extinct. There is no way in the world that we will ever get to see them again, unless you watch these movies. So I've always liked the idea behind the Jurassic Park franchise. We have been without new Jurassic Park or Jurassic World movies for a long time. I think it was in 2015 when we saw Jurassic World. The movie before that was 15 years before that. So there was a great interest, a great hunger for new stories in that universe, and new episodes in that franchise. And Jurassic World, even though it took a lot of the elements from the existing movies, did bring it to another scale. I mean, it went from park to world, and it created, I think, a pretty believable kind of Disney World type of environment in which the story unfolded. And I think it also took this interesting idea that the moment you start to tinker with life, things get out of hand, because ultimately life is not something you can truly control. You can create it, you can modify it, but the consequences of that can surpass anything that you can plan for, which makes this movie more than just entertainment. I think there is a deeper message in that as well. Is the moment you start to tinker with life, be careful. Think twice. Don't try to exploit life for just commercial needs or goals, because life is too precious for that, and also too dangerous for that. And that's something that I think is true also for our day-to-day lives and the way we treat life and the way we are supposed to protect it but often exploit it, whether it is human life or animal life. Think about the way that we produce our food, the way we take care or don't take care of our environment. There are so many things that can disturb the balance in nature, in our world. And I think this story has a bit of a moral as well, that just be careful. So I like that aspect in Jurassic World. Of course, they created used genetic technology to create a super dinosaur, even more dangerous than the Tyrannosaurus Rex, the new king of the jungle. And the whole plot was about the moment you start to tinker even more with these extinct life forms, then the disasters will be equally big. This new movie is a sequel to Jurassic World, and it is the second movie of a trilogy. They've already conceived the plot for the third movie as well, and there's some hints, very few hints, but still present hints in this movie that the next story is going to develop some of the things that we saw in this one. However, it's a very good standalone movie. If you've never seen any previous Jurassic Park or Jurassic World movies, you'll be totally fine watching this. That's also immediately the problem with this movie. It is a standalone movie, and it is taking all the elements that we've already seen in the previous movies, from the first one to the most recent one, and puts them on display and doesn't add anything new. Really, there is nothing new in this movie. All the ingredients are good, but it's like a meal that you just ate yesterday and they're warming it up again, and it's like, didn't I just eat this? There is no surprise whatsoever. And during the movie, I was actually waiting for something new to happen. I just assumed that they were going to take the story a step further, but instead, they just rehash every single plot point. There are even the camera, the way the camera moves, the way the world is shown, is they're all homages, let's say, or copies of what we've seen before. The acting is fine. The actors are okay. The action is fine. We see great dinosaurs. We see them fight. A lot of them are done with practical effects, which always helps. But there are also a lot, and I mean a lot, of digital dinosaurs moving around in digital environments. And we're so used to detecting digital stuff nowadays that it's almost the. I was thinking while I was watching this movie, I was thinking back of the very first Jurassic Park movie, which got a 3D, a re-edition a few years ago. And I rewatched the first Jurassic Park movie in 3D. And it actually was more believable than the stuff that I saw in Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. There's just too much going on where your mind tells you this can't be real. You're watching something digital, and then you see the little flaws of that. So that took me out of the movie. What also took me out of the movie is the lack of chemistry between the two main characters. That was already a problem in the first Jurassic World movie with Chris Pratt and the actress who plays the... in the end, she turns out to be his love interest. And it, for some reason, it just doesn't work. These two may be fine actors by themselves, but together... it's just not working. There's also a Jeff Goldblum, and I'm not spoiling anything because you saw him in most of the trailers that were already airing for this movie. Jeff Goldblum is back. Of course, he's a fan favorite of the Jurassic Park franchise. And his appearance in the movie is completely redundant and irrelevant and a total waste of a great actor. I was like... what were they thinking, really? I can only hope that they will bring him back in the third movie of the trilogy and give him a more substantial role, but this was a waste of an actor. And so the movie almost, even though I enjoyed it, you know, it's like a popcorn movie. It's fine. But I started to look at my watch halfway through the movie, which is always a bad sign. I always do that when the movie ultimately doesn't really do anything for me. It doesn't bring me to places where I haven't been before. It's just like, okay, how long do I have to watch this? And it's okay, but yeah, I won't go back. This is one of those movies where I will not go back and see it again. And something told me that this movie is still going to be a major box office hit. And perhaps I was also a little bit disappointed that Solo was such a box office disappointment. Whereas in terms of story, in terms of what they try to do, yes, of course, every Star Wars movie is also rehashing certain elements of the Star Wars franchise that are kind of obligatory ingredients. And yes, I'm also one of those fans that hopes that Lucasfilm and Disney will try something new with Star Wars very soon, that they will be able to step away from the kind of these safe boundaries that kind of guarantee that Star Wars is going to be Star Wars. Let them try something a bit more daring, like what Marvel did with Thor Ragnarok, for instance. But regardless of the fact that Solo played it safe, it was still a much better story and in many ways a much better movie than Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. So perhaps that was also... why I was at the end very disappointed by this movie. It's just a lack of creativity. And they were promising us so much for this movie. The movie has two parts. The first part takes place on the familiar jungle islands, and the second part takes place in a much more confined environment. We've seen that in previous movies before. The second part of the movie fails to be interesting. Also visually, it's really boring. there were scenes towards the end where I was like, okay, whatever, let's move on. So yeah, if you love to spend 2 hours at the movies and you just want a popcorn movie with dinosaurs, you just want to step into that familiar universe again and get what you ate the week before, then by all means, go and see it. But don't expect something innovative or something super exciting. If you lower your expectations and you have some money to waste, then yeah, sure, go see it. If not, if you don't care that much for the Jurassic World or Jurassic Park franchise, I'd say just wait for this to stream on one of the platforms. It's probably a better use of your money and of your time.
Catholics rock!
It's time for a short visit to the Peculiar Bunch, and this is the place where we talk about the Catholic faith and the world of the Catholic faith and the culture.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
And today I want to give some commentary on the news. It's not something that I do all the time, but I think there is a perspective that I want to give on
Man,
what happened.
You guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
The news that I want to comment upon briefly is it's actually threefold. At least in the Netherlands, we got three news articles that appeared almost a day after the other, and they all concerned unexpected suicides of famous people. It started with the news of Kate Spade, a fashion designer, very famous fashion designer, who killed herself. Then relevant for the Netherlands, probably not breaking news in other countries, the sister of our queen, our queen in the Netherlands, Maxima Zorregieta, her sister Ines, I think it's her youngest sister, she also killed herself and died by suicide. A great shock. We knew that she had issues. She was suffering from an eating disorder and depression. But still, comes as a shock, especially because you kind of, when you look at Maxima, her sister, such a bright, charming, very extroverted, cheerful person, it's always comes as a shock that the rest of the family may not be exactly like her. We always assume that, well, if it's family, then they're probably all going to be copies of each other. Well, of course not. I'm very different from my sister and my brother and from my parents, and yet we're family, so... That's why wouldn't that be true for other families and more famous families as well? And then, of course, very recently, the shock of the unexpected suicide by Anthony Bourdain, the CNN presenter who has been a chef, a master chef, a chef cook, and became super famous for his global travels and his programs about food and about the people that make the food. Anthony Bourdain created so many shows that I loved to watch. It's someone who also had a rough past and at some occasions spoke openly about that, about his when he was still a famous chef. He was at the same time suffering from substance abuse. He had been suffering for most of his life of depression. And he was in the middle of a shoot in France. And that's when one of his colleagues found him and he had killed himself. And fortunately, most people react with sorrow, with mourning, but also... I saw so many people say, though, if you have similar feelings, don't hesitate. Just call a helpline. Get help. Doesn't matter who, but don't carry this cross alone. And then a few people act with rage. They don't understand. They're mad. They lash out. And I would say that both reactions are understandable. The rage that some people feel, the betrayal sometimes that people express, especially people that are close, like there were friends of Anthony Bourdain who expressed their anger. How can you do this to us? We had such a bond. I think it's an anger that a lot of the relatives of people that have committed suicide can empathize with, can understand. If that happens to someone who is near and dear to you, especially if you weren't aware of that person suffering from depression, then a suicide can seem and feel as a selfish act, as something that doesn't take into account what it the pain that it inflicts upon the people that are left behind. And I've accompanied several families in my time as a priest that had to cope with that and that had to go through those moments of anger and misunderstanding and rage almost. Like, how could you do that? And yet, the anger is almost always a phase. And the more, especially if it's an unexpected suicide, oftentimes afterwards, in therapy or in the pastoral conversations that you have with people, room starts to grow for understanding, or at least not always understanding, but people start to see, well, there were warnings, there were telltale signs, there were warning signs and signals that we didn't see, we didn't notice them because, well, we just didn't realize the extent of this depression. Or sometimes people are like, well, we knew that there was something was going on, but we couldn't do anything. There were some people just closed themselves off for help and we couldn't reach that person. The other reaction to news like this is also, I think, understandable and laudable, and that's this desire to express your sorrow, to honor the people for what they've done and what they brought to the world. It's not being unrealistic to say that even though someone may have robbed him or herself of their lives, that the value of their lives is not measured by the gravity of the way they have ended their lives. There is also, in every death, there is also cause for celebration of everything that a person, the value that a person had, inherent value, even regardless of what a person has accomplished in his or her life. There is always value to life, no matter how short it is, no matter how small or insignificant it sometimes may seem to the world. But it's always about balance. And that is also the way in which the Catholic Church talks about this. There are these both dimensions of suicide. There is a dimension of scandal, of the feeling that this is not supposed to happen. There is the death, especially if it's a self-inflicted death, if it's suicide, or in other cases, euthanasia, abortion. Church will always stress the objective drama of that and the evil of that. And I'm not talking about evil intentions, but about there is an objective, this is not a positive value. There's no way that the Catholic Church will ever label a voluntary or an inflicted death, whether it is murder or suicide or another form of death, as something that can be inherently good. No, it's inherently wrong. It's not supposed to be like that. And so that's what the Church affirms in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. There is, life in itself is a gift. And we believe as Catholics, it's a gift of God. And it's God that is the sovereign master of life. And we in our lives are trying to accept the gift that we've received, even though our lives are never perfect. They're never, and our lives are often broken and damaged. And not just physically or in the things that happen to us, but also mentally, psychologically. Who doesn't have flaws? Who doesn't cope with really hard moments that we haven't caused ourselves, that we haven't chosen ourselves? And yet, we are always challenged to accept life as it is, to embrace it even, to love ourselves as God loves us. And so in that context, that life is a gift, destroying that gift is in itself wrong and damaging and hurtful. On the other side, the Church will never condemn someone who has committed suicide, has taken his or her own life, without always trying to understand the situation. What has been going on? And if someone has been suffering from depression, then that in itself is an illness. That's not something that there's... I'm always so amazed that for some people, this is still something they don't understand. They think that depression is something that you can control yourself. You know, cheer up, you know, don't be so depressed. Try to be like me. I'm not depressed. The sun is shining. You know, why aren't you more cheerful? Talk like that. Please never, never tell someone that. Because you don't take the seriousness of an affliction like depression. You don't take it seriously enough. And that's not what's going to help someone else. There is professional help that is available for people that suffer from depression. And it's a drama and it's a scandal if that help is not available or it's too expensive or out of reach for people. This is something that a church has also always stressed. It's like, let's try to take care of each other as faithful, but also in our societies. We have an obligation to take care of people that for whatever reason cannot take care of themselves, are suffering physically or psychologically. We need to be there for each other, and especially for the weakest among us. That is why the way the church talks about life in situations of suicide or euthanasia is congruent with the way the church talks about the life at its earliest beginnings. That is why the Catholic Church will never, ever defend abortion, will never say that that can be something good. It is something that is destroying innocent and very vulnerable life. And it's so that is that in itself. Now, the church will also always be ready to forgive and to listen and to try to understand. And there will be situations where, for whatever reason, people have made this decision. The church will always say there is a way back. There is a way to find reconciliation, to choose life again, and to start anew. But the church will always say that we cannot relativize the gravity of taking someone else's life or taking your own life. And at the same time, the church will say it is vital that we do everything we can so that it is not necessary that people take their lives, that we help them, that we find help for them. And it's not that we as pastors receive a formation so that we can help people by listening, by talking. It's a pastoral help that we can give. But we are also taught that if we are dealing with people and we start to realize and we discover that there are psychological, psychiatric issues, then that is beyond our ability as pastors. Then you have to refer people to professionals that can take care of that. But there will always also remain a spiritual dimension. That's true for people that suffer from depression. There is, of course, a medical side to that. But depression can also kill your spiritual life. It can also menace your relationship with God or the image that you have of God. And sometimes people will express that and they'll say, well, God doesn't love me anymore. Then we as pastors are supposed to help people with that aspect of their affliction and tell them that God loves them regardless of how you love yourself or how you feel about yourself, that God loves everyone. And that God cannot help himself for loving even the biggest criminal. God can only love because he is love. What we sometimes do is close ourselves off from this love, and that will hurt us and that will cause damage. But then God is always trying to open us up to his love again. So there are also spiritual dimensions when it comes to the whole euthanasia debate. The Catholic Church will always say, well, before we ask ourselves, how can we help people die. There are lots of euphemisms for euthanasia. Die honorably, accomplish their lives, blah, 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 blah. There are lots of ways that our society tries to disguise what's truly happening, and that is someone is killing someone else. But the church will also have what is primary for the Catholic Church is the compassion. What are we doing wrong in our society that sometimes elderly people feel that they'd better just end it because they're being a burden on other people? Their life has no worth anymore. Their suffering is too great and there's nobody who helps them carry their cross, etc. Same is true for the whole abortion debate. The Catholic Church will try and should try to always help mothers that are expecting a child in difficult or sometimes seemingly impossible situations. Try to find ways to be close to these mothers and sometimes to the fathers as well. Not abandon them, but continue to accompany them. And also be there for the mothers that have taken the step to end the life of their child. And to not condemn them and push them away and say, there's no place for you in heaven anymore, or there's no place for you in church. The Catholic Church will always emphasize the importance of a closeness to these people that are oftentimes carrying the wounds of that for many, many years, and to help people find reconciliation again and rebuild their lives. And, you know, I'm not talking just theory. I've been in many situations as a priest where I've been trying to help people that suffer from the consequences of death in life, in all their forms, and I've become convinced how important this ministry is. It's hidden. It's something we cannot talk about and will not talk about because it's sometimes under the seal of confession, or it's because of the confidentiality of the people that we help. But it's happening, and it's happening a lot, and it's something that the world doesn't see and oftentimes is disregarded in the discussions that we find in the media. But my church is a church of compassion, a church with a great heart for people that suffer and that wants to be close to them, just like God will be close and wants to be close to anyone who is in distress, anyone who is suffering from whatever affliction, and will never abandon people in their worst moments. All right, that's what I wanted to share with you. And from that, let's travel to Mars.
The scientifically wonderful world of science.
What sort of science?
Welcome back, science friends.
Welcome back, science friends. It's time to talk about something very interesting and exciting that I saw in the news. And this has to do with our little Land Rovers, our rovers that are still roaming the planet Mars and that are drilling into the ground and analyzing the stuff that they found. And that drilling has now given us proof of organic material existing on Mars. Now, don't ask me the details because I'm not a scientist, I'm not a chemist. But what I did understand is that they have found building blocks for life. It doesn't mean that they have found life itself, but they have found elements that if there ever has been life, or perhaps still is life, and these elements have to be present. Now, NASA was also ready to explain that even though they found these organic materials, it doesn't mean that they have a biological origin. There are chemical reactions that can also create these elements, but there is at least a possibility that they have been caused, that they have a biological origin. There are also findings of methane gas on Mars, which creates a big puzzle. If there's no life, there's no oxygen on Mars, then that gas shouldn't be out there, and that gas is being pushed to the surface. But they don't understand how that can happen. So very, very interesting findings That were published, and that will, I think, also warrant more future missions to the planet of Mars, because we don't know everything, and we now have more advanced technology that is available for the future probes and I don't know, devices that we'll send to the planet Mars. And learning more about the origins of Mars can also give us a lot of clues about life and its progression in our world. And sometimes people say, or some scientists say, that Mars is kind of like an older Earth. This is what could happen to our planet as well if things go wrong. So even from that perspective, I think it is fascinating to learn more about our neighbor planet and perhaps get even more scientific proof that will guide us in our decisions on how we treat our planet. And those decisions, I am very much in favor of the decisions that concern the preservation of our planet should be based on science, should be based on facts and not just on emotions or vague theories or even worse, on just economical deliberations. I have a feeling currently this weekend that I'm recording this, we've got the G7 summit that's going on, and there is constant fighting worldwide, especially between the bigger countries, about how far we should go into preserving our planet. And oftentimes you will hear, "Well, but it's going to be bad for the economy," and it's almost as if we put the value of the economy, the well-being of our economy, above everything else. As a Catholic, I would say that is immoral. That is totally immoral. You cannot put the economic needs before the needs of our future generations and even our current generations. And we know for a fact that it's often the underdeveloped countries that suffer the most from the wasteful behavior of the rich countries. And my country is one of those rich countries. We are polluting the earth, and we are causing major distress to people that are not able to sound the alarm, that we don't have camera crews walking around there. They don't have access to the social media and to the barrage of commercial channels that we have to get the word out, but it is destroying their habitat, and not to mention animal life. I don't know if it's just me, but I'm seeing so many stories about what plastics are doing and what havoc they are causing in our oceans and among animals and insects. And it is beyond high time to change that and to make a change. And that is why it's so important to have a philosophical and a moral discussion next to having economic discussions. And that is why I continue to pray for our world leaders, that they are not just driven by greed, by selfishness, that countries are not just driven by selfishness. And unfortunately, a lot of our countries are, let's be honest. My country is probably one of them. And it is time to open our eyes and to think altruistically about this planet, but also about our children and our grandchildren and the generations after us. We cannot use up this planet and leave them to solve the problems. I often think back of WALL-E, that wonderful Pixar movie, where we see a cartoon version of our future, where the planet has been abandoned by mankind. They live up there on a satellite, having luxurious lives, and then the droids are left here on the planet to clean up the mess. And it's a huge mess. Well, you know what? It's only a cartoon. It's only an animated movie. But if we don't change, then that may actually be a prophecy instead of just entertainment. Something to think about that. Let's change to the world of technology.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, "Hey, I see you plugged in a new device." And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner built... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
Now, after my talk about the need to preserve our environment and to be careful with the resources, I'm going to talk about technology, which can also sometimes be a threat to this very same environment. It's our constant hunger for the newest gadget, the fastest phone, or the sleekest computer that drives us to overconsume. And I'm still learning and struggling with this. Is it ever justified to spend? It's a hard question. When do I buy a new gadget, and when do I just stick with what I have? Do I truly need a new phone? I'm giving myself every time lots and lots of reasons why I need to buy something. But then I've learned over time, by trying to apply the concepts of minimalism, but also biblical values of modesty and trying to be happy with less, and having the value of moderation. Fasting is a way to apply that when it comes to food and consumption. To always ask myself, is this a want or is this a need? And is my life going to be fundamentally more useful or more productive or happier or holier when I buy this new gadget or not? And I'm getting better at it. It's still hard because I still complain about my iPad being too slow and not having enough memory. And I read all these articles about newer phones that have much better cameras. And then I'm like, oh, my front-facing camera is so lousy and I probably should replace my phone. It's now, my phone is from 2014. I deserve a new phone. Is that really true? Well, what I do know is that sometimes for my work, I do need my phone to be able to do certain things. And I've been using an iPhone 6 Plus with great joy. It's been an amazing phone. I filmed my entire Camino to Santiago with my phone, and you'll soon be able to enjoy the result of that, because this is just a little segue. We are working on our June documentary, which is going to be all about my Camino. It's going to show you not just my journey, but also what it did to me. And after a year, I'm looking back on that journey. What have I learned? And what are the lessons that perhaps are of value to also other people? So it's fun to rewatch that footage, and I am impressed to see what that little phone was able to capture. The best camera is the one you carry with you. Well, I carried that one with me for the entire journey, and I was able to film so much more than I would have been able to do with a bigger camera or more professional camera. Not to mention that those cameras would have been too heavy to carry all the way to Santiago. But the phone is getting older. The operating systems are slowing it down. I was very excited to hear during the last keynote at WWDC that iOS 12 will actually work also on older phones, also on my iPhone 6 Plus, and that they have done everything they could to optimize it so that it will run actually faster than iOS 11. And of course, seeing is believing. I'll have to wait and see if it's truly going to speed up the phone again. But I'm glad that they do that, because it prevents people from throwing away their phones, and by that also wasting resources. I think it was a stance against this programmed obsolescence that Apple and a lot of other manufacturers have been accused of, where they deliberately slow down your device by putting out more and more demanding operating systems and apps, thereby forcing people to go spend money on newer devices. Whereas if you would still have your phone with the software it ran when it was brand new, then that phone would be super fast. And, it's definitely something that I've seen happening on my iPhones, and saying iPhones plural, because that happened also on previous models that I've had. But for now, I'm still waiting for iOS. That's coming out in the fall. And there was another reason that I wanted to switch phones. That has to do with my Tick Watch, my Android watch that I've been carrying. And that works a lot better when it's connected to an Android phone compared to the iPhone. I've noticed that the iPhone keeps breaking the connection. There are Bluetooth connectivity issues. And I've been told that Android phones work much better. Well, my Android phone was in use by Martin, our producer and office manager. And so he got a new phone because his older phone, he had two phones, one for a Tridio and one personal phone. And his personal phone gave up while we were filming in Maastricht during that big pilgrimage there. And it was a hot day and his battery basically, well, not didn't explode, but crashed under the heat. And so his phone could not be salvaged. He bought a new phone, which was dual SIM. So he could use both SIM cards, the Tridio SIM card and his personal SIM card, on that one new phone, which made the old Android phone that I lent him available again. Now, this is a OnePlus One phone. It's a phone from 2014. I bought it in 2015. I think it was launched at the beginning of 2015. At the time, it was one of the most affordable phones with incredible speed and incredible power. And this is the only phone that I've ever had that did not slow down over time. It still feels incredibly speedy. But there's one big problem. It was no longer updated. They have abandoned updating it. It was first it was running Android, like a modified version of Android. Then they switched to Cyanogen. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And then they stopped supporting that. And that makes your phone very vulnerable, especially Android phones. And I don't want to walk around with a lot of personal data that can be hacked. But after a bit of Googling, I found out that there is another modification. There's another company that makes that tries to adapt Android. And Android, of course, is being made available as an open source thing by Google. Makes it available for people that want to adapt it for older phones. So I stumbled upon what was it called again? I'm starting to forget. It's like they have adapted Android 7 and also Android 8, because but it's not yet out for this phone. So Oreo for the older devices. And so I can't believe I forgot what the name was of that company. It'll come back to me. But anyway, I had to root the phone, go through a lot of very nerdy technical hoops to install it on my phone. But it's working and my phone is up to date again, running a safe version of Android. And I also installed, and that's what I love about Android, I installed an amazing launcher, Nova. And Nova enables me to customize the phone and use nice little icons and widgets and whatnot. I dare to say that this phone now works better and looks better than a lot of the new Android phones that you can get that you can buy in the stores right now. It's still blazingly fast. I've also tried to find a solution for the camera. That's one of the weaker points of the earlier OnePlus phone. So I've installed the Bacon app, the Bacon camera app. And it supposedly gives you a lot more control over your shutter speed and white balance and focus and whatnot. So I can't wait to try that out on this phone. But then all of a sudden, and it works so well with my watch. It's incredible. It's as if the watch itself is like twice the functionality than when I had still connected it to the iPhone. So that's a joy as well. It is also able to listen to me. And this is an older phone. Well, it's kind of the same age, I think, as the iPhone 6 Plus. But it listens to me all the time. So if I say, I won't say it because I got some complaints. If I say the keyword, the magic word, it will actually listen and respond, even if it's not charging. And the newer iPhone models can do that, but not my iPhone 6 Plus. So I'm very glad to have this obedient phone that is able to do all the things that I wanted a newer phone to do. And I can still use this 2014, 2015 phone probably for another year, if not more. So it's exciting. And I still can't figure out what the name was of that. And you know what? I'm going to look in the settings. It should be mentioned somewhere. If I go into the settings and go to the about, it should say Lineage. There you go. It's Lineage OS. Go look it up. If you have an older phone, maybe worth hacking it and installing Lineage. But it took me about a day to get it installed because it was not easy to do. You find these instructions, but it's written for nerds and geeks who know what they're doing. For total beginners like me, it was trial and error, mostly error and a lot of trial. And with that, I think we've almost come to the end of the show. Let me... of course, we still have games to talk about.
The humanoid must not escape.
I cannot not talk about video games because today or tomorrow, Sunday, E3 is going to start, which is the biggest games convention, business convention in the world. And we will see a lot of announcements from the big gaming companies. I've noticed, by the way, that a lot of these companies are putting their older games on sale. And so I'm now able to pick up some of the games that I've been wanting to play for a long time, but I just didn't want to spend 50 or 60 euros on them. One of them is Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront, a much maligned EA game that looked great and was a definite improvement over the first Battlefront game, but included this form of online gambling, which was the loot crates. And under tremendous pressure of the entire gaming community, they have been forced to remove those loot crates, or at least to remove the progression system that was dependent on those loot crates. So the game is no longer pay to win, and you can still spend some money, but it's only for like visual items, cosmetic items. And the price of Battlefront 2 has now gone down to €19.99. So that starts to become a price that I'm willing to pay for a Star Wars game that can immerse me in the worlds, not only of the existing movies, but also in the newer movies, The Last Jedi. There's going to be a new season with lots of elements from the Solo movie. So I'm kind of on the fence of getting that. The only thing that's keeping me back is that it's mostly based on online gameplay, and I've never been very good at online gameplay, like first-person shooters. That's really not my thing. So, but then again, I'm enjoying Fortnite, so perhaps it's just something I need to get over with. I don't know what's going to bring us in terms of virtual reality news. I'm hoping to hear some announcements of bigger games for instance, the Oculus Go, but I'm not sure about that. And in the meantime, I'm still doing my Oculus Go streaming movies. You can find them on my Facebook page, and afterwards I'll also try to upload them to my YouTube page, which is youtube.com/FatherRoderick. And I do those reviews in the Oculus goggles themselves. So I'm streaming straight from my virtual world. And it's a lot of fun because I can still chat with the people on Facebook. So I've been trying out a puzzle game, Augmented Empire, which was a lot of fun. I'm also, today they have a space shooter on sale, which I might try. And that's another thing that I love about the Oculus Go. It's virtual reality, but the prices are so much lower than for the Oculus Rift or the, the Valve, the HTC Vive. And so a lot of the games, if you just wait for them to go on sale, and there is an app goes on sale almost on a daily basis, you sometimes only pay like €3, €4, €5, five for the bigger games. But you then have a virtual game that can last you for hours and hours and hours of gameplay. And so I think that's a very, very nice side effect of the Oculus Go. It's originally these games were designed for mobile devices, for the Samsung phones that you can then put in a holder, and that would create VR. So they also adopted the pricing strategy of those mobile phone games. a little bit more expensive probably than regular games, but only a few bucks more. But it's still a massive difference between the Oculus Go pricing and, for instance, the PlayStation VR pricing. For a game on the PlayStation VR, you'll pay full price. You'd easily pay $50 or $60 or euros. And that, to me, is a bit too much for a virtual experience because, you know, just by the nature of this technology, you only play games for about an hour and then you really have to stop because it's unhealthy and you'll get nauseous. And you need to get out and get some sun. So those are my thoughts, but I'm still hoping to see a little bit more virtual games, and I'm still hoping for Minecraft in VR on the Oculus Go. I really want to play that. Well, with that, I think it is truly time to end this show. It was fun talking to you. And, of course, the show is always streamed live on Facebook, mostly towards the end of the week. Couldn't do it on Friday because I was too busy with other stuff. But Saturday, also a good alternative. Thank you for supporting me over on patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And if you are a patron, then at the end of this month, you will get access to my Camino documentary. So keep an eye on that. I'll see you next week. Take care and God bless.